Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and congratulations to the Republican Party in the state of Colorado, and for the most part, the state of Minnesota. You know how to count votes in a caucus. If we could have a little applause in here, I'd add it, but it was actually nice to know that votes were counted in a reasonably efficient manner. In fact, I think Colorado, whose caucuses were held later because they're further west, obviously, finished their vote counting even before Minnesota did. So well done, Centennial State. Well done.
The Colorado did take a good long while in some of the larger counties. But then again, it is the land of Tebow. So, you know, they're going to wait to the final minutes to really come alive. So it's kind of a cultural thing out there.
Most of you probably already know, it was a very good night for former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum. He was expected to do well in Missouri. He did very well there, in fact, getting a majority of the vote. He also won in Minnesota quite handily and in Colorado, where Mitt Romney was supposed to win. And Minnesota was supposed to be a pretty tight race, and Santorum ended up winning pretty big. Anyway, he had his victory speech in Missouri, which is probably because he was expected to do the best there, and he did. And here's just a smattering of what he had to say related to the events of the evening and how he'd like the campaign to go from here.
Conservatism is alive and well in Missouri and Minnesota. I don't stand here to claim to be the conservative alternative to Mitt Romney. I stand here to be the conservative alternative to Barack Obama. If this president is reelected and if we don't have a nominee that can make this case and not be compromised on the biggest issues of the day, but can make the case to the American public that this is about the founder's freedom. This is about a country that believes in God-given rights and a constitution that is limited to protect those rights.
Jim, obviously this race is ping-pong back and forth. Who knows if this is Santorum's high watermark or whether this is the start of some significant momentum. Time will tell. We're still, as we've mentioned before, about 3 weeks away from the next contest outside of the main caucuses wrapping up this weekend. One thing that this will do is certainly put the spotlight on this week's CPAC conference in the Washington area. It gives the more conservative voters a little bit of a shot in the arm, those who don't think Romney's conservative enough and were basically perhaps drifting towards him out of electability or inevitability or something like that. And with Romney having to address CPAC as well, hopefully it'll help him hone his conservative rhetoric and hopefully conservative policies, given his problems with addressing how he'd address the poor in this country last week. He could certainly use a little polishing, and hopefully that polishing will be genuine if, in fact, he's the nominee. But overall, whether this changed the race a lot, I don't know, but it certainly put the focus on conservative principles, at least for a little while, and that has to be good.
It is. I concur, Greg. I mean, if you believe, as I do, and it seems like many, many conservatives do, that the moment Mitt Romney clinches the nomination, he is going to tack to the middle as if he was the Roadrunner from the Warner Brothers cartoon so fast, and he will immediately take up an entire agenda designed to aim for the lowest information, most likely to flip swing state voters, your soccer moms. I fully believe that his closing message of 2012 will be, "I love puppies." something really unobjectionable, nothing particularly conservative. Good government, good America, good. I believe in America, you know. So if we're going to get anything conservative out, if we're going to pin him down to any particular conservative positions, it's got to happen during the primary. And the idea of the primary ending, you know, when the primary ends, conceivably this ends as well. So Santorum getting this, you know, contest to go on and prevent the notion that Romney has this wrapped up is good news for conservatives. As you said, it makes CPAC a very big deal. One of the worst things that could happen in this for the Republicans into this is if Romney wins and is convinced he has the conservative vote locked up, because where else is it going to go? And, oh, those folks wouldn't dare stay home. You know, you don't want to walk into a contest like this with any misplaced confidence. And the Romney campaign shouldn't have that consequence. I'm not certain that closing that gap and winning those folks over is undoable or unthinkable. But the first thing is you got to want to do it. And if last night doesn't make Romney want to do it, I don't know if anything will. I'm not so sure that there's a way to win the nomination without getting conservatives at least somewhat enthused about your candidacy. It is a big warning sign, Governor Romney, and you probably want to hone your appeal to conservatives in the next couple contests, or else Rick Santorum will come out of nowhere and really give him a serious run for his money. And as we all know, Mitt's got a lot of money.
So that'd be a serious run. And, you know, if this is a changing of the guard and the anti-Mitt preference of Republican primary and caucus voters and Gingrich fades, which is a big if because he still has money and plans to make a big stand on Super Tuesday and other places, that's the last thing Mitt Romney wants. He needs two non-Mitt candidates out there. So very, very interesting, and conservatives should be at least heartened a little bit. One of the things Santorum also talked about in his victory speech last night was his outrage at the Obama administration forcing everyone to offer contraception services in their health care plans. And, of course, Catholic institutions are very upset about this. Jim, I remember back in 2009, 2010, what was the first words out of President Obama every health care town hall meeting? If you like your health care plan, you can keep it. Well, apparently that's not true for groups of conscience, such as the Catholic Church and all their different entities, hospitals, charities, and so forth. Now, of course, you get this huge backlash from the Catholic bishops and other organizations. And even those who I think generally like the idea of contraception and don't have a problem with that don't like to see other people being told what they have to do, because eventually they're going to be the ones getting told what to do, and nobody likes that.
You just hit the nail on the head there, Greg, because there's a world of difference between not having a moral objection to birth control or contraception and the concept of, oh, if it's in healthcare plans, that's fine. But the whole point is that this should be up to the choice of the institutions. The federal government and this administration have no business running around telling people what to do and what has to be covered by their healthcare plans. We've seen this in this concept of mandates. All 50 states have mandates, and then you get into cases where they have acupuncture must be covered by healthcare plans and cosmetic surgery and all kinds of other circumstances. That really, this is one of the reasons that adds to the great expenses of healthcare, is when state legislators who don't run health insurance plans suddenly decide that they know better and that they should decide what must be covered under penalty of law. Quick observation noted on Twitter is that this is how the assault on economic liberty represented by Obamacare inevitably represents an assault on other forms of liberty, including religious and moral liberty. Whatever your view on contraception is, why should the federal government come in and tell you that you have to provide this for someone? Why should you be forced to violate your principles in that manner? There's been some talk in the last couple of days that the policy will be nuanced. I'd like to see the administration nuance their way out of this particular dispute. But as Catherine Lopez observed, I think quite accurately, I don't think you'll see any substantive changes coming out of this. I think Obama likes this fight. I think he prefers the idea of, well, I'm on the side of women and all of my opposition is retrograde and old-fashioned and the old fogies who don't understand the way the world works. I think he'll be very comfortable with that argument. But I think, and you're seeing this from columnists who are not always, you know, vociferous criticisms of Obama, like Kathleen Parker, and even E.J. Dionne, who is, you know, probably about as staunch a pro-Obama columnist as you will find, recognizing that, one, this is making every Catholic who backed Obamacare look like a fool, because now it has come into the case in which the state is basically coming out and telling the church to kind of, you know, we know what your religion says you got to do, but we outrank you and we're going to make you do certain things. And then two, this is a very ugly, vindictive, punitive mentality coming through in all this. This is the ugly side of Obama. And so, you know, you could argue this is a bad martini for the country, but maybe a good martini for us. Because the more it shows the true Obama, I think the better off the chances of his defeat are in 2012. A lot of our martinis are multifaceted. You know? they have their good swigs, their bad swigs. You know, sometimes it tastes two ways at once.
On to martini number three, and we go back to last night's contest in Missouri and Minnesota and Colorado. And we mentioned a big night, obviously, for Rick Santorum, how it could shake up the complexion of the race and how the candidates focus on various issues. A couple things that are worth pointing out, though. First of all, Rick Santorum won zero delegates last night because Missouri has a caucus coming up that will actually determine that. And in both Minnesota and Colorado, the caucuses were designed to pick folks to go to the state convention. So ultimately, there certainly could be some delegates picked up by Rick Santorum as a result of those votes. But officially, he picked up nothing. But in terms of momentum and in terms of money, most likely, could be a huge deal, as well as changing the narrative of the race. Also, the caucuses were supposed to be the grand strategy of Ron Paul, but he did not finish in the top two in Nevada. He did finish second in Minnesota, but was a distant second, and he did not show all that impressively in Colorado. He's supposed to do pretty well in Maine, largely because I think he's been the only one that actually went to Maine. But if this is the grand surprise strategy, it's not working very well, and you have to wonder what's next for him.
Yeah, the Ron Paul wave is always just around the corner. It never really seems to arrive. You know, there's been some respectable finishes. You know, second place is great, but the Ron Paul fans very rarely, you know, you always put him, so where's he going to win? They never have a spectacular answer for that, and these wins never quite come to fruition for him. The other thought in this, and it's worth noting why we are in these circumstances of non-binding ones. The first is regarding Missouri. Newt Gingrich called it an accident of the state legislature, and I think that it's reasonably a reasonable assessment of these things, meaning that Missouri, under state law, Missouri's presidential primary has to be the first week of February. So the only way you can change that is by changing the state law. And they passed a law to do this, but while they were passing that law, they also threw in some things that would have limited the power of the governor to appoint U.S. Senate vacancies, et cetera. Unsurprisingly, the Democratic governor did not like this. And so while he said he had no problem with moving the primary, he vetoed the bill. The RNC said that everybody had to get their primary dates lined up by October 1st. Because of the state legislative schedule, Republican state legislators were not able to pass a bill changing the date. So it's not that the state, the Missouri Republicans wanted to hold a primary yesterday. It's just they are literally obligated by law. And that's why Missouri taxpayers ended up spending about $7 million for a contest that that did not count for anything. As you mentioned, the actual delegates will be done at the caucuses for the state. Minnesota and Colorado, because yesterday's caucuses select the people who go to the county caucuses, who go up to the state caucuses, yesterday at least had a little bit of influence on this. And based on what we saw, you'd expect Santorum to end up doing pretty well in terms of the amount of caucuses he gets out of those two states. I guess I could say all three of those states. What was kind of fascinating, there was an email from the RNC, which is, you know, kind of the official scorekeeper of all this. As of right now, Rick Santorum has three delegates. And I can hear a lot of listeners out there saying, wait a minute, he won Iowa. Ah, but Iowa does not tally its delegates based on what happens at the Iowa caucuses. Like a lot of these other states, the official delegates are set up at the state convention, which is, I believe, in April. So does it seem complicated? Does it seem convoluted? Yes. Everybody, get rid of your caucus system. Go straight to primaries. Go to the RNC schedules. Go with the Garrity plan of rotating regional primaries. And keep it simple instead of this mess. Because, you know, I mean, Greg, I don't know about you. I don't know if I would show up in a non-binding primary. I don't want to take away from, you know, good old Senator Santorum, and he should feel good about last night. But in the end, it's kind of like being undefeated in preseason football. It's not bad. But in the end, yeah, I was thinking, you know, boy, last night couldn't have gone better unless, you know, maybe some delegates were in there.
They're making progress, though. Now they know how, at least in some of these states, how to count votes. Next time, have something to win. So we're getting there, step by step.
Baby steps, Greg. Baby steps. This wasn't the crazy martini. This is the good martini today. Math skills are not dead in this country.
Jim is off to CPAC to do battle with the Occupy protesters the next couple of days. Jim, assuming you make it through there unscathed, we look forward to some great stories from you on Monday.
Let's get ready to rumble!
All right, Jim, have fun there. We'll talk to you Monday.
Look forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.